Hello, Keller ISD, and welcome back from spring break. I'm Nicole Lyons.
And I'm Bryce Neiman.
And we're from the KISD Communications Department. We are gearing up right now for an eventful spring full of more important conversations on this podcast.
Today, we're talking money, money, money. Woo-hoo. Let's get started and learn more about public school financing in Texas.
Hey, Bryce.
Hey, what's going on?
So today we're going to talk a little bit about taxes. That's a fun topic, right?
It really is. You know, taxes and death, the two things you can count on in life, right? Yeah. So it's going to be an exciting one indeed. You know, I think, though, that the average person looks at school business, the business of what schools do through the lens of what happens in the classroom. And that makes sense because that's at the heart of what we do, obviously. But the truth is there's a lot that goes into what goes on behind the scenes that people really don't understand, especially with school finance. It's probably one of the most confusing aspects of public schools and definitely the least understood, I think.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you would think it would be similar to other municipalities like cities or counties, so it would be more just simple to understand.
No,
but nope, that's not how they do that. And on top of that, these things are always changing with new laws and legislation that come into play. And so, it's difficult. But the good news is we've got an incredible finance department led by our CFO, Scott Rare. And, you know, he's a really smart guy. And I'm glad he agreed to join the podcast this month and share some really important information about school finance with our community.
Definitely. It's no small task. He stepped into this role in the middle of COVID and this global pandemic going on. So there's all sorts of things up in the air. We're just really fortunate that he was able to join our team. He's a great addition for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So let's go ahead and join Dr. Westfall and CFO Scott Rare for this conversation.
Welcome to our next episode of Westfall One-on-One. Our topic today is school finance. Probably one of the more complicated topics that we deal with in school is trying to manage through how we fund. And our chief financial officer, Scott Rare, has joined us to help us navigate this with our audience and just to answer some of the more straightforward questions, but questions that seem to always come up in the community. So Scott, welcome to the podcast and look forward to the conversation about school finance. So before we get going, it's always good for the audience to know a little bit about you, your background, what brought you to Keller ISD. So I'll be quiet for a minute and let you talk a little bit about what brought you here and what prepared you for this position.
Okay, sure. I'm completing my 24th year in public education. I started back in after college at Fort Worth ISD, and so I've worked in many different districts in the Fort Worth area, both small districts as small as 5,000 students all the way up to 80,000 students, both property poor and property wealthy districts. And I've now been in Keller since it's July of 2020, so almost a year and a half now.
So you just stepped right into this role just a few months into the pandemic and all that that brought with it as it relates to school finance, which we can talk about a little bit later, but that was your welcome to the district.
Yes, so it was a very interesting time to join a new school district.
Yeah, I bet it was. So So like I said, as we were talking at the beginning, school finance is probably probably the most complicated element of how we manage schools. And let's just talk about some of the more basic things. So one of the pieces that generally comes up as a question from our community members, it comes from when they get that blue tax bill in the mail. You know, it talks about their home values. It talks about what their tax bill is, their property tax bill. And then there's always a breakdown of city taxes and school district taxes, and there's probably, four or five, maybe even six categories that they pay into. And school districts are always going to be the highest dollar amount in that, but it even breaks down further that's not shown on that tax bill. So can you discuss a little bit about what our tax rate is and how that breaks up into two categories and what those two categories mean?
Yes, our tax rate is broken into two components. The first one would be the M&O, or the maintenance and operation tax rate. Our current tax rate is at 1.004, and that's per $100 of property value. And the M&O tax rate is used to help fund the daily operations of a school district. And then the other component would be your INS or interest in sinking. And our current rate is 34 cents per $100 of value. And that tax rate would be used to pay off principal and interest for bonds that the district has issued after voter approval.
One question that comes up, in fact, I just had a conversation recently with one of our community members, is the misunderstanding of, okay, well, they see one tax rate and they see one tax bill. But those are two completely different buckets of money. What is it about school finance that doesn't allow us to move them between the two? I mean, talk a little bit about the fact that it's very specific to what it can be paid for.
Yes, the funds that are collected. So when we receive property tax collections, as I mentioned, $1.004 of that would go to help us fund our operating expenses.
Right.
And then the 34 cents would go to the INS. And those funds cannot be commingled. And so that's kind of a misconception that many would have is they would say, well, just, you know, can't you use some of that INS money to pay salaries,
right,
you know, to give raises to staff or for additional staff? But those funds are specific only to help pay off debt. And so, you know, same thing as when you receive money for bond, when you sell bonds for a school district, those funds, once again, can't be used for your daily operating expenses. And so it's two very distinct, pots of money.
And I know your experience has been school finance only, but as far as you know, other municipalities that rely on tax revenue, cities or counties, do you know if they have the ability to move money around that comes in, or are they locked into very distinct funding formulas, or do they just have one tax rate and it's not broken up like it is for us?
Well, I guess it depends on what the, you know, if it's a city or
right,
what the tax district would be, but generally, they do have different funding sources as well. And, you know, one thing that can also be confusing is that, you know, on property taxes, there's a limit on how much a district can collect on that. And also, you know, how those funds are used. Whereas for a city, sales tax, if sales tax increase each year, well, then the district or the city is receiving,
sure,
all those additional funds.
Right.
And so part of the funding formula that school districts are subject to, if they receive a certain amount of property tax collections, and the state now says it's excess entitlement, so basically it's more than what the state would deem the school district should receive, then the school district has to send some of those funds back to Austin, and it's under what they call recapture, and so that wouldn't exist with a city.
So let's dive into that a little bit since you brought it up. So sometimes people hear that as recapture, other times people might hear it as Robin Hood. It is a system that's been in place for years. To your point, it was originally intended to be a direct partnership with property wealthy school districts, partnering with property poor school districts around the state, and it would literally be I'm moving money from our budgets to their budgets. Isn't that the way it all began?
I think that was the initial intention.
That was at least the initial intention.
Yeah.
Right. So how does that work now? How does recapture work in the sense of if a school district is needing to send money back, quote unquote, I guess, or never receive the money? So recapture is happening. How do we know where that money goes when it's being recaptured? Does it go back to a specific district?
We wouldn't see that information. I mean, it's supposed to go back to the state, and then the state is supposed to use it to distribute out to property poor school districts. But over the years, you know, that hasn't always taken place. So as far as what percentage gets passed on to other school districts, we don't have that information. I think the state uses a lot of that resources now to help them balance their budget or meet other spending needs that they may have. But recapture, you know, just continues to grow. I think the latest I saw, it was over $3 billion for the state. Some school districts, they may have, you know, a smaller amount, where some could be in the 25 up to $100-150 million per year that they're sending back to Austin.
So where's Keller ISD at in terms of recapture?
Ours is very small, depending on, you know, how our property values go throughout the year and our tax collections, we're somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million per year.
Okay, so that, and like you said, that's a pretty small amount of money compared to what other districts have to deal with. Is it fair to say, and I know it's a very complicated formula, so I'm simplifying this too much, but is it fair to say that as a school district levels out in their student enrollment, similar to what we're at in Keller ISD, we're built out, there's not a lot of buildings coming in or a lot of houses coming in that's going to really spike our student attendance. But if as our student attendance either plateaus or slows in terms of growth, but if the values or the value in the entire district goes up faster than what student enrollment does, does that play an impact of how recapture then works?
Yes, it does. Yeah, the current formula looks at how much money you're able to bring in versus, I mean, it takes into account your revenue, and then it looks at your enrollment. And so as you mentioned, as your values continue to grow, if your enrollment's not growing, then the state would say you're collecting even more than what you need to help fund the education of those students that you have. And so, yes, our recapture would continue to grow based on that.
Got it. So as property values rise, there is obviously an assumption. If I'm a taxpayer, and which I am, and I'm writing that check every year to the Tarrant Appraisal District or the Tarrant County Tax Office, who then distributes the money. But as our values rise, we just assume that all that money is coming straight back to wherever it is we're paying our money to. Can you talk a little bit about how tax rates are now changing and what that operational piece looks like? Because there's no reason for us to assume that if I hand you a check, then in my mind, you have my money and you should do with it whatever you need to do with it. But I don't know that it's that simple when it comes to property taxes.
No, it's not. I guess starting back in 2019-20, the legislative session, they included a tax rate compression. And so now as school districts receive more funds or as their property values go up, then their tax rate will be compressed. And so just as an example for Keller, over the last 5 years, we've grown on average by 7% per year. And so, you know, as the property owner, you're seeing the value of your home go up and you're seeing your tax bill go up, but the district's not receiving all of the additional revenue from that. So the district's capped on how much they will receive. And so each year as our values go up, currently the way that it was set up is any growth over 2.5%, the district's not seeing that money come back to the district. It's actually being sent back to Austin.
So that's a combination of, because the reality is any school district is funded based off of local tax collections, state contributions, and there's, for Keller, there's some federal money there as well. Those are essentially the big three pieces, right?
That's correct. Yeah. This year's budget is about 65% from local sources, of which probably the majority of it, almost 62% of the overall total, is property tax collections. And so the rest, so we have 65% from local, about 34% from state, and then the remainder is from federal.
So that's an important piece. There, you mentioned House Bill 3 a few years ago, and part of, as I understood it, part of the intent of House Bill 3 was to help equalize that a little bit, where the state would have a larger percentage or a larger contribution towards public education and take some of the burden off the local taxpayers. But every year that we progress, that continues to outweigh itself, and local property taxes are still a larger percentage and grows in percentage every year than the state contribution. Is that accurate as well?
That's correct. For us, that percentage really hasn't changed dramatically, even mm-hmm. since House Bill 3. You know, I think the initial goal would probably be to be closer to where local and state are 50-50. But most districts that I've seen, that's not the case, at least the ones that I've been in. The local share is much higher.
Yeah, and, you know, it's fair to say that in the state of Texas, there is a constitution. The constitution says they need to provide a public education system, and yet they're relying more heavily on local property tax values than they are their own ability to fund education. So it's very complicated, and I know that it is, but that's the reason why it's always a conversation every 2 years when our elected officials go to Austin to try to figure this thing out, because it's a massive undertaking. In Keller ISD, we're funded essentially on a 65-35 split between local funds and state funds, which begs the question. There's another public education entity out there that the state continues to grow, and that's the charter school program in the state of Texas. And I know this is not about charter schools. This is not a topic of charter schools, but I think there's some confusion about how charter schools are funded. If people go into this, charter schools are a public ed. They are a public institution. They are adopted and opened with the blessing of the Texas Education Agency. But what tax base do they have to pull from in order to be funded?
They wouldn't have one unless they were pulling from a school district's tax base.
So, but they're not part of a school district, ISD. No. We have no authority over a charter school. So a charter school has no taxing entity. They have no boundaries to tax within. So if the local tax base doesn't exist, then isn't it safe to say that 100% of their money comes from the state?
That'd be correct.
So if their charter schools were minimized or didn't exist, then there'd be more money than to put towards ISDs, because they wouldn't have to fund a completely separate entity that is not offset by local taxes.
Yes.
Okay. Just curious about that. For those that are curious about how charter schools are funded and financed, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that people can see on our website, and how can they learn a little bit about how we operate in the finance world. There are awards that can be received that we have received in Keller ISD, but why don't you discuss a little bit about how people can learn more about what we do?
Yes, on the district's website, so under the departments, there's a finance department, and within that department webpage is financial transparency information. And so we would have previous year's audits that are out there, financial audits that were completed. I think we'd probably go back 5 or 6 years on those audits. We have property tax collection reports, investment reports. We have our budget, our proposed and adopted budgets would be out there. A lot of very good information, a lot of debt information, so the taxpayers can see, you know, how much debt do we have per student, per our property tax values. And so we take pride in having that information out there. We think that's very important so that taxpayers, you know, can see how the district's operating financially. And so we are one of, I think the last time I checked, there were about 34 school districts out of, you know, a little over 1,000 school districts in Texas that had received at least two transparency stars from the state comptroller, and Keller ISD was one of those 34. So it's very important for us to make sure that we have that information out on our website for the taxpayers to see.
That's awesome. All right, so every year, for many years, public ed finance is always a little bit of a challenge. Our whole process of creating a budget, trying to get a budget adopted, and then we work through it for the school year. There's a lot of estimations on your part. You and your team try to figure out, to the very best you can, what do we think the revenue is going to be at the end, by the time the year is over, and what do we think our expenditures, where are we going to land there? So can you talk a little bit about what that process looks like of budget creation and budget planning?
Sure. So we'll start on the revenue side. So there's a lot of assumptions that we have to take into account. The first one would be, what do we think our enrollment's going to be for the upcoming year? And so we can either, you know, look at trends for the last, let's say, 3 to 5 years, or a lot of districts will hire a demographer who will actually go out and assess, you know, what they think the enrollment will be for the year. And so, you know, we're tracking that. Last year, we probably dropped about a little over 3% of our enrollment from before the pandemic. This year, we've been able to get about 2% of that back. But so that is kind of the first place that we start, is what do we think our enrollment? How many students do we think we'll have for the following year? And then based on that, we look at what do we think our attendance percentage is going to be? Because school districts currently are funded based on their average daily attendance in Texas. And so, you know, in the past, we've used 96%. So we believe that on a daily basis, 96% of our students will be in school. And that has also gone down since the start of the pandemic. So initially, we were close to 96%. We've dropped probably about 0.5% the first, I guess, last year, and then in 2020. And then this year, we're actually down about 4% from where we have been. So those are the first two components, is looking to see what we think our enrollment's going to be and what we think our attendance is going to be. And then the other component on the revenue side would be looking at our property values. And as I mentioned before, you know, over the last 5 years, we've grown by about 7%. And so at this point, we would use that same amount. But every year we get property value estimates from the Tarrant Appraisal District. And so those start coming in April. So we'll receive a preliminary estimate in April, another one in May. And then we'll use that data to help propose a budget to the school board for adoption in June. And then we won't actually receive what our actual certified property values are until July. So after we've actually adopted the budget and started the new year.
So there's a lot of, I mean, we can obviously look at trends. Probably the biggest challenge that every school district is facing right now is the result of the pandemic and what that did to enrollment and attendance rates. In relatively normal years, you can trend out about what our attendance rates typically are historically, about what our enrollment growth is going to be. We talk to demographers and we try to figure out what our enrollment is going to be. What's good news and going on in Keller ISD is that while we had that initial drop in enrollment, we do see a trend of kids coming back. So we'll eventually be back at pre-pandemic enrollment numbers moving forward. But you made a point in there I want to be sure people heard, that we're funded based not on how many kids do we have to serve, but what's the percentage of time that they're actually in our schools. So we have to figure out how to serve them with 100% of the teachers and 100% of the utility bills and 100% of the space and the facilities, but we're not funded, we're not given the revenue for 100% of the kids that are there. I don't know that there's a question there other than to say that sounds really backwards.
Yes, and I think most people in school finance would agree.
Right.
It's a challenge because you do have to base your expenditure budget on 100% of staffing. I mean, you have to assume that
at any given time, those kids are going to be in the building.
Right, that they will be in the building. And so on the expenditure side, you're using a different, you know, using 100%, but on the revenue side for that, you're only using 96%, 95% some districts use. And so, yeah, there would be the 4 to 5% gap in there, which for a district our size, that could be $10+ million.
So, and in fairness, for a community member listening, if we were funded on enrollment and not on average daily attendance, ADA, if we were funded on enrollment, does that make their tax bill go up any higher?
No, that wouldn't change it at all.
No. So their check is still the exact same. Their property tax is still the exact same. But yet the district would realize a $10 to $11 million increase in budget.
That's correct.
Okay. Another piece of what you were talking about in terms of the challenges that we're facing right now, going forward, how are we seeing what demographers are talking about? What are we looking like in terms of our revenue? Can we expect an increase? What do you?
Our demographer is projecting, and right now their projections will go out for the next 10 years. And they're seeing our enrollment getting back to the pre-pandemic levels, but then from that point, for the most part, flatlining.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we may go up a little bit, 50, you know, students 1 year, down 50 the next. So we're really not seeing much of a change in enrollment. And under the current state funding situation, if you don't have an increase in enrollment, you're really not seeing much increase from a year-to-year basis on your revenue.
Right. So many times people will ask, well, what could, I mean, how can we help? I mean, what is it that the community or the stakeholders in Keller ISD or in any school district do to help with such a massive undertaking in terms of what school finance is? Do you have suggestions? Because I know elected officials every 2 years go to Austin, and this is one of the things they wrestle with every 2 years in terms of trying to find the funding. Do you have suggestions, or have you seen successful initiatives that community members have taken on when people are down in Austin?
Well, I would say probably the first place to start, as we just talked about, is the shift from funding school districts on attendance versus enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be the easiest, the cleanest way to do it is, and that's probably what most states do. There are only a few states out there that actually still fund.
I think we're only like, what, one of seven?
I believe that's
states.
That's correct, yes.
That fund based on average daily attendance. Everyone else is based on, in some form or fashion,
right,
based on enrollment.
Yes. And so that would be the first initiative, is to change the funding to be based on enrollment. The second one is, and the state funding formula is a very confusing topic, and there's many different components within there. But in essence, every school will at least receive what they call a basic allotment. So that's like the minimum amount that you'll receive for educating a student. And right now it's at 6,160. And so a lot of times in the past, you know, legislators have increased state or school funding, they put strings attached to that. And so they've said, okay, we're going to give you additional money, but you're going to have to use it on X, Y, and Z. And so and that's kind of what took place with House Bill 3, is a lot of school districts saw a significant increase in revenue, but they were being told how they had to use those funds.
Right.
And so I think the second initiative would be to increase that basic allotment and not to have strings attached, to say, okay, if we're just under 6,200 per student, let's increase that by a certain amount, and districts have the discretion to decide how to use those funds.
Based on the needs of the local community.
Right, yes.
So at the end of every one of our episodes in our podcast, we always like to find out why people do what they do. What's their why? And it kind of helps us stay focused and recharged, especially in times that we fight through some of the struggles. School finance seems to always be a struggle. So you chose us for a reason, Scott. You mean you got into this world for a reason. So why don't you talk a little bit about what your why is and your role?
Well, you know, I think school finance, it's kind of a passion of mine is to make sure, and I'll kind of go back to why, but it's to make sure that our students, our teachers, our staff have the resources that they need, to make sure that we're able to provide every opportunity that we can to educate our students. And so, you know, kind of the why would be, for me growing up, my dad didn't go to college. My mom got her associate's degree, but both of them, they really, you know, poured on to me the importance of an education.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with them, and then also the influence that I had with teachers and coaches growing up, you know, just helped to kind of mold and shape me. And so math has always been something that I've enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
And so when I first got out of college, I went into public accounting and enjoyed that for a while. But, you know, I think kind of going back to just the influence that people had on me educationally and just wanting to get into a situation where I could, as I mentioned, that I could help, you know, do whatever I could to help students to learn. And so for me, it's just making sure that we're being good stewards of the resources that we're given. I think that's very important, just to maximize whatever we can for our students.
Well, thanks. And thanks for sharing all the information. I know this is a topic that could go on for a very long time. And we have lots of questions that I'm sure people would be willing for us to tackle. But I appreciate you giving us a little bit of an overview, Finance 101, basically, on this podcast. And have a great rest of your day. But thank you for joining us, Scott.
Right. You're welcome. Thank you.
A big thank you to Scott and Dr. Westfall for having such a transparent conversation with our community.
Yeah, there's so much there. I know you really just scratched the surface of all of the variables that go into play when it comes to Texas public school funding. Mm-hmm. But I really appreciated the way he kind of broke it all down, especially for those who may not be familiar with how it all works. It's so easy for us as taxpayers to see that line on our tax bill and just kind of make assumptions about how schools are funded or how money's spent by schools. But it's really important that as a community, we're informed on these things and we realize how complex it all really is. Mm-hmm. Maybe we start asking different questions instead of, you know, how's that money spent? Maybe we start asking, why is this so complex exactly? Or are there things that could be done to streamline things and make it easier on public schools to know how to, you know, plan and be able to set up their budget? You know, maybe it sounds crazy, but maybe they could know how much funding they're going to get before they set up their budgets. That'd be kind of crazy.
Wouldn't that be just the best? Yeah. You know, and I know it's not a fun moment when we see that amount on our tax statements. And, you know, really, we do. All of our public school employees also pay these same taxes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's even more important that we all understand what that's about. And we let this conversation possibly serve as an important reminder to continue to increase our knowledge and understanding about school finance. And once we understand it, you know, use our voice as citizens and taxpayers to make the change where we feel it's necessary, because this is all for a better future for our public schools and for the 5+ million children who these schools are responsible for educating.
Right. And for those who want to be even more informed, as a district, we put everything out there finance wise. Like Dr. Westfall and Scott said, we've been recognized several times, almost annually, for our financial transparency. And so if anyone wants to dig in and get more details, they can just go to www.kellerisd.net/finance. And there is so much information and data there on the website, more than you may know and more than you probably want to ever know. But it's all there.
It is definitely all out there. And we hope that you will check it out from time to time to stay up to date with the latest and greatest information. We thank you again for listening today.
And don't forget to follow Keller ISD on social media. We're at Keller ISD on Twitter and Instagram. And Facebook.com/KellerISD. You can also keep up with Dr. Westfall himself on the Twitterverse by following him at Dr. R-Dub Keller ISD. And you can find links to all of that in our show notes.
We hope you'll join us and Dr. Westfall again for another edition of Westfall One-on-One.
Till next time,
#CelebrateKISD.